Any order? We have a quorum. And first order of business will be the approval of the amendments of March 30th. See, Representative Hackbarth moves those amendments. Any additions or corrections? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Most prevail. Minutes are approved. See, the, I think we'll go ahead and have Representative Newman come up, House File 3983. He was here early and has a quick bill. So. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I will move House File 3983.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, this is a, I believe, a really a quick bill. Cedar Mills is a very, very small town that is in my district, and it had some problems wherein, for the most part, there were private septic systems that were being utilized in this little town, and it was causing a specific pollution problem with respect to the South Fork of the Crow River. They decided that they wished to go forward with putting together a new septic system treatment plant within this little town. And it turned out that there were some significant unforeseen costs after the system was completed, which ran their monthly utility bills from an anticipated about $36 a month to almost $76 per month. The reasons for the increase in the costs that were unforeseen to this small community was, number one, they had a federal grant wherein the feds reduced their grant by a sum of $50,000. Number two, they had originally been told that the stormwater drainage system for the city would not have to be replaced. They would be able to use part of it. And it turned out that that was incorrect information, and the original entire drainage system had to be replaced. Number three, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency mandated, after they had begun construction, that they had to put in a wastewater storage pond. That cost them an extra $100,000. And fourth, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency told them that after they had started this project, that they would be required to hire a Class C operator to manage the system, and that is costing the citizens of Cedar Mills an extra $10,200 per year at today's costs. And what they have requested that Senator Dill on the Senate side and that I on the House side bring forth a bill which would allocate from the general fund the sum of $100,000 to assist them with this project. They specifically cannot do a bonding request because the system is completed. And it's for that reason that when you look at House File 3983, we're looking at money coming out of the general fund. With that, Mr. Chairman and members, I have no further information to provide to you, but I will do my best to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay, are there any questions? Representative Junkie.
Well, Mr. Chair, are we going to hear from Bowser? I'm I guess, still a little confused as to why the request is being asked out of their appropriate, or their funds, rather than, you know, at the Public Facilities Authority or someone else that actually does sewer and water construction.
Okay. Someone from Bowser like to come down and answer? Thank you. welcome to the committee. If you could identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, Ron Harnick with the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources. And
did you hear the question?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Junkie, could you repeat the question?
Mr. Chair, Representative Newman is asking your department for $100,000 for sewer and water reimbursement to Cedar Mills. Just wanted your comment on it. Did you work on this project, or why is your department being asked to pay for it instead of the Public Facilities Authority that funds sewer and water projects, or did you have a role in it? Why is Bowser being asked to pay for this?
Mr. Chairman, the and Representative Junkie, the really only relationship we've had is with respect to the local water management plan, which did identify some issues here with respect to wastewater and water quality. We do grant money out. This is not a typical thing that we would do. It would traditionally come through another agency, but we do have the ability to grant money if the dollars were appropriated.
So, Mr. Chair, I assume then that you didn't request this, or maybe Representative Newman, why are you asking for Bowser rather than over in Gunther's deed committee, where most of the sewer and water requests go?
Representative Junkie, I don't have a specific answer for you other than the folks from Cedar Mills went to Senator Dill, asked him to carry this bill. It was handed off to me to carry on the House side.
It's the Senate's fault.
No, I'm not saying it's anyone's fault.
Oh, that's okay.
I'm saying I don't have an answer to your question because I don't know the answer.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Junkie, I was reminded that 2-3 years ago there was a similar appropriation that had identified Bowser in it at that point in time, and I think it's kind of just carried that same language forward to today. And since it's coming out of general fund, it makes a difference than coming out of like bonding or other things that might be related to PFA. But other than that, we have had no particular involvement in discussions on this in a recent year.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Question is answered. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? And Representative Newman, I'm sure you're aware of how tight the funds are this year, so it's chances are between slim and none. But the item I would like to draw to your attention and let you know we'll work on, and that is as the Clean Water Legacy goes forward, we have some dollars that are earmarked for this type of effort. We have included the reimbursement for funds on some of the wastewater treatment facilities, and maybe something on the septic systems could be worked out also, so we'll take a look at that.
Thank you for your candor, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate the hearing. Thank you, members.
House File 3983 will be laid over for possible inclusion in supplemental bills. The next bill we have up is House File 3200, Representative Hacker. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that House File 3200 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register.
So moved.
Or does it have to go to Ways and Means?
Ways and Means.
Ways and Means. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The members, this is the DNR technical bill that we have almost every year from the department. And I have Mr. Bob Myers here that can run through the bill and explain exactly what we have.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. Bob Meyer, Director of Legislative Affairs from the Department of Natural Resources. The bill before you today is the DNR technical bill, as Representative Hackbarth has stated. It deals with contracting, clarifying the language there, clarifying several sections of ELS statute where the deposits for the commissions are put. We also have some language clarifying the snowmobile sticker, invasive species, straightening out trails, and some water use permitting fee language that we're picking up that we missed during the special session last year. Section 1 of the bill just creates an 84.026, a separate section for contracts, or for grants, I should say. So you can see Section 1 for striking out issues dealing with contracts and recreating a new section in subdivision 2, so we can clearly state when we do the paperwork and fill these out what section it falls under. And it also says all contract and grant agreements under this section shall be processed according to section 16C.05. Sections 2 of the bill, and also several other sections, you'll see where we're striking out the Electronic Licensing System Commission in the beginning of the receipts and putting that in a new section, or not a new section, but under the use of the money in the account. So we're making sure that the ELS Commission is not part of the actual receipts of those accounts. It goes to pay for the operation and the processing of the ELS system. Section 3 is language that we clarified on the snowmobile sticker in Environment Policy Committee, just making sure that the fee for the annual snowmobile sticker is $15 and the fee for the three-year snowmobile sticker is $30. So, Mr. Chair?
Representative Angus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Meyer, could you give me a rough idea how much is in the wild rice management account?
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, with a little help from staff, I know it's not a lot of money.
You can get that to me later on, and I know we've got a hearing in ag policy later on today about that, about wild rice. I'd just like to get it sometime to me today.
Representative Magnus, we could get that for you after committee. Moving on, as I said, Section 3 is a technical correction to the snowmobile sticker, which was established last year. Section 4 outlines exemptions for enforcement for political subdivisions. If you have a collector snowmobile, or if you have a grant and aid trail, that system that runs across your private land, we want to make sure that you are not required to have a sticker to ride on your own land. So these are all sections that we did work with MinUSA and the office from last year to move forward. Section 5 just clarifies where the placement of the sticker should be. Section 6, this is the beginning of several sections dealing with invasive species that we're just cleaning up. We're striking the words can naturalize and in the first section there, 84D.019A. The next section, you may recall the past couple years we've been cleaning up these sections of law, going from invasives, the term invasive species, to non-native species. It's nomenclature that's used throughout the country, and we want to make sure that we're all using the same terms. So section section 7, section 8, and then in section 9 we're clarifying about transporting infested water, making sure that when you're on, say, for example, a big body of water and you have water in your live well, that is legal to keep that water in your live well while you're moving around in those waters. Section 10, we're adding curly leaf pondweed into the definitions, into purple loosestrife, your raising water milfoil as an invasive into these programs. So you'll see those changes there. Section 11 deals with the clarification of the trail systems that are out there. Thanks to Representative Junkie and some other people last year, we ran into a situation where we realized the situation in statute where our trails, for all practical purposes, don't line up on the ground as they are stated in statute. So we're coming through and cleaning these up to make sure when we do receive funding for them that we do have the authority to spend those monies on those segments. So Subdivision 5 deals with the Glacial Lakes Trail. Section 11, I should say. Section 12 deals with the Blufflin's Trail. Section 13 with the Sockatah Singing Trails. Section 14, the Willard Munger Trail. Now, I want to make sure that people understand we aren't removing any sections of the Willard Munger Trail that are currently there. All this is a technical change. When it was established, there was a corridor through Ramsey, Anoka, and Washington County that was a transmission right-of-way that there was thought that the trail could go through there. After further investigation and discussion with the utilities, it was determined that we couldn't use those right-of-ways for those trails. So we're cleaning that up, and actually we're expanding, clarifying in statute where the Willard Munger Trail goes, adding a segment in there, and also cleaning up some gateway language there. Section 15 was added in committee dealing with the Great River Ridge Trail. Section 16 is the ELS language again. Section 17 is a piece, we're striking the word, term game refuge manager from the 97A statutes. We don't use, there's no classification for a game refuge manager within the DNR at this time, or for, hasn't been for a while, so we're striking that. Section 18, if you go to the next page on 8.34, this is some language, we're just clarifying, in each of the months of June, July, and August, that these numbers are calculated from. Then also, if the municipality has more than one permit, we're making sure that it's based on a total appropriation, not on each permit that's out there. Section 19, we're clarifying who needs to have a permit to operation aeration systems. Section 20 was added in committee dealing with the Wabashaw County Regional Trail. Section 21, we're actually repealing the language that's up in Section 19 that currently exists in law, so that's what the repealer deals with. And Section 21 is the effective date dealing with those trail segments that were added in policy committee. And that is the bill.
Okay. Questions? Rep. San Wiganius.
Yes, I'm looking at Subdivision 11 on the Willard-Munger Trail. Apparently, you're deleting any potential for it coming into Ramsey, Anoka, and Washington counties. Am I getting that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wiganius. Yeah, you're correct. That segment now is dealt with through the Gateway Trail, and we're looking at extending the Gateway Trail up through William O'Brien and then picking it up that way from Taylor's Falls. Looking at the land that's there available on Ramsey, Anoka, and Washington, there's just no corridor available to build the trail through there that we can see.
Representative Wiganius.
Okay. Help me out with the Gateway Trail. Where does that start? From the city.
There's a segment on 7th or Payne and 7th Street, the Bruce Vento Trail, which is considered a segment of the Gateway Trail that runs through there down Sleepy Hollow up to Lake Phelan. Then the Gateway Trail starts around Keller Lake, Lake Phelan area and runs over and up down Highway 36 through Stillwater. And then what we're looking at, or to Stillwater, I should say, Pine Point Park. And then we're looking at going from Pine Point Park up towards William O'Brien State Park. It's about a 10-mile segment there. We're looking at actually doing here relatively soon. And then go from William O'Brien State Park to Taylor's Falls and then hook up with the Willard-Munger Trail up that way.
If I could follow up, Mr. Chair. I can see you're changing the how. That's one thing, but I don't understand. It would be nice to have a timetable of how all of this is going to get done. Is this in my lifetime, or is it in my children's lifetime? What's the timetable here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wiganius, there are a lot of factors there, including money and willing sellers. Working through bonding bills and acquisition timelines. I can get back to you on that, Representative Wiganius, and kind of outline what our hopeful timeline would be, but there are some variables in there that we don't have any control over as well.
I would like you to chat about it, but just answer the quick question, in my lifetime or in my children's lifetime?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wiganius, hopefully in your lifetime.
Any other questions? Anyone in the audience want to speak for or against 3200? House Bill 3200? Okay. Mr. Myers, could you rip some penance?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on page 4 of the bill, on with regard to the invasive species, I just need some clarification. Okay, we're taking out an invasive species and we're adding a non-native species. And is that in general? I'm just questioning from the ag point of view, do we get then the commissioner of the Department of Natural Resource overseeing crops and I'm neutral on this. I just need to know what this is going to mean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pennis, The changes we're making are in 84D, which are run or overseen by the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. And what we've done in the past, 2 years ago, we came through and they cleaned up this chapter, going from invasive to non-natives, because those are the terms being used by aquatic and terrestrial researchers, professionals in the field dealing with these organisms. The agricultural pieces that you're talking about would be picked up under the ag statute. So we work together jointly, but also it deals with just specifically 84D.
Okay, thank you. That's what I'm saying.
Any other questions? Okay, and Mr. Myers, does this bill spend money?
Mr. Chair, no, it doesn't.
And what is the reason that we're going to do Ways and Means?
They don't need
it. Did they specifically request it? Or, Mr. Reinholz, maybe you can shed some light on it.
Mr. Chairman, I don't see anything in that bill that would require it to go to Ways and Means. I mean, there's a lot of technical language in there, but the governor submitted it without any fiscal effects. And I don't see any. It wasn't amended, I don't believe. And I don't see any. I would say that it really does not need to go to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chairman, I was not. I did not receive any request from Ways and Means to see the bill either.
Representative Cathcart, I think then we should just go ahead and send it right to the General Register. Is that Ways and Means is getting pretty well backed up. I'm getting concerned about what's going to happen there. Okay. Might as well get this on the General Register as long as it doesn't have a fiscal impact. Are there questions about that? Okay, the House file 3200 is recommended to pass and re-referred to the General Register. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Bill is passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Representative Cornish, House file not here. All right. Oh, that's a good time to take that one up, though. That's not a junkie.
Thank you, Mr.
House file 3442.
Mr. Chair, I would move House file 3442 for consideration and possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And maybe just a brief description, and then I do have an amendment that I would like to explain and add on. Members, this bill, a lot of you on the Ag Committee have already seen it. It passed out of there unanimously a week or so ago. This was brought to me by the I also have the Minnesota Honey Producers Association, in conjunction with the University Apiary folks and others, have been meeting and decided they needed an update in their statutory language. It oversees bees. A lot of those laws are over 100 years old, and they pertain to African killer bees and other things that really don't have any pertinence here at this point in time. And they recommended a repealer of a number of sections of the beekeeping statutes. And so with that in mind, we have done that. The amendment I have, actually, unbeknownst, and I still don't know how we did it, but last year all of us somehow repealed a section of the beekeeping law that would allow inspections of bees, et cetera, by the Department of Agriculture, and we shouldn't have done that. So I don't know how that got in the bill last year. It was in session law. And we need to put it back in. And that's what this statute does. So there's some repealer sections, but we're actually putting back in something that was repealed last year at the request of the department. And I have no problem with that because The only time they need the department right now is frankly, at certain states require inspections for transport of the beehives. And right now they actually don't have the statutory ability to do that, even though they have been doing it the last year. So, Mr. Chair, at this point I'd move the A2 amendment, and hopefully we can put that on to make that correction.
All right, Representative Jackie moves the A2 amendment to House File 3442. Are there any questions? Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, we did this on purpose. I mean, it's the last thing that we did. I remember this beekeeper thing coming up then. I just wonder if there was discussion about it. I just wonder if anybody from the DNR is going to say anything about why we did it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cornish, it's the Ag Department, and we do have the...
Ag, okay.
We do have them here if you have a question for them, why it was taken out last year.
Is someone from Ag?
Why we're jumping back and forth.
I think President Dunphy said he thought it was done an error.
I think it was last, this section, but we'll find out.
The amendment section.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Geir Friso. I'm the director of the Plant Protection Division of the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Representative Junkie is correct. That repeal was an error. There was an update of the registration fee structure last year, and that what happened was that entire section was incorrectly repealed, and the second paragraph should have been left intact. And quite frankly, we were as surprised as anybody to find that it had been repealed.
Testimony referencing the A2 amendment. Okay. Any other questions on the A2 amendment? Okay. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The bill is amended.
Mr. Chair, maybe the department will stay here.
Department, stay right there.
There was a fiscal note that showed up, which frankly I don't understand, and so maybe the department can explain it to us. Again, remember what we're doing is repealing the a lot of the beekeeping statutes, including the fee they pay to the department. And once that fee goes away, obviously that program goes away, except for these inspection statutes that we put back in. And even today, the department charges for those inspections. They charge mileage and an inspection fee to go out and inspect the hives. So I'm a bit perplexed why there would be a fiscal note on this. If you sunset someone but still charge for any fee into the future to cover those costs, I'm not sure, but perhaps we can get an explanation from the department here.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Steve Ernest, Budget and Finance Director, Department of Agriculture. Mr. Chairman and Representative, what this bill does is repeal all the apiary statutes. So these statutes contain the authorization to charge the fees. The fees are deposited into the general fund, and then the amounts appropriated to undertake the activities are part of the larger general fund appropriation to the division that does this work. So when money passes through the general fund, we don't earmark it. It's non-dedicated money. And so that appropriation, just the way this bill is drafted now, remains untouched. So all we're doing is taking away the fees. And I would point out that there are two separate types of fees. There's the export certification fee, which brings in about $8,000 a year, which is the part that we want to put back in there. That's just charged to cover the cost of doing that export certification. And then there's the registration fee. Now, last year we raised the registration fees. They were bringing in about $4,000 a year, and we raised them a little bit, so they brought in $13,000 a year. But even though we raised those fees, the difference that we brought in, the $9,000 difference, wasn't appropriated in whole. A portion of it, $1,000 the first year and $2,000 the second year, were appropriated, added to the division's budget, but it wasn't a one-for-one ratio because they're not dedicated fees.
Yeah, Mr. There's a test on that testimony. We're all going to take it here in about 2 seconds.
And Mr. Chair, that's one of the questions that the beekeepers had when we decided to sunset these statutes. That's exactly the reason why. They perceived they were paying these fees into the department, and it was going to the general fund, and this attests that.
and not going to the services that they necessarily want, which is why they're in conversations with the university and others at this point to see if they can't get some their money going towards research or other things that actually pertain to the apiary industry. We put the language back in for the inspections. Like he said, $8,000 or so worth of inspections each year they can still do and charge. But beyond that, the beekeepers, the Producers Association claim they aren't seeing a whole lot out of the department, so other than to help them balance their general fund. So while I feel sorry they maybe have a hole in here, it just doesn't make sense if it's a fee for service and it's not going to the service. I think they have a very valid point from a beekeeper's standpoint.
So the way this is structured right now, though, there is a $13,000 that we have to account for.
And, Mr. Chair, again, it's going to the general fund from the beekeeper, so I don't know why, you know, I would hope the department would absorb that cost somehow because, frankly, it should have gone to a fee-for-service at the beekeepers, and once that service was sunset, there should be no more need for it.
I think the department still has the money appropriated from the general fund that it had before. This doesn't affect that. So it means that any surplus that would be currently being evaluated in general fund would be $13,000 less. Is that? That's all right.
And is that, Mr. Chair, I don't know if that's an annual number or biennial. Again, this fee takes effect, obviously, July 1st through the second year of the biennium.
Mr. Chairman, the fee is an annual amount. The $13,000 is an annual amount, and we collect most of that June 1st. So the effective date of this bill is upon enactment, and we assumed it would be effective before June 1st.
Right.
And so we would still lose that for fiscal year 06.
And, Mr. Chair, we purposely did that so they did not have to pay the fees this coming year. That's why it's on enactment.
Great. Any questions on, further questions on the fiscal portion? Representative Wiginius?
I have a question on the research issue, not the fiscal issue, if I could.
Anything on fiscal? Okay,
for thank you, Mr. Chair. So, in the end now, what decision did we make on the $13,000? Is it going to go to research for the beekeepers, you know?
Well,
or do we not know?
Well, again, Mr. Chair and Representative Bennett, what we know here at this point is exactly what the honey producers told us. They don't want to pay that $13,000 anymore to the department because obviously it's going to fund their general fund and not going to bee activities. And so they are internally now discussing with the university whether just to transfer their own dues and fees over to the university to the apiary folks for research and other things that they need in their industry. But the department claims there's a hole, and again, that's where I you know, beg to differ with them or trying to understand why that fee ever went to the general fund. And to me, that's a departmental problem right now because the beekeepers, again, well, the reason they're sunsetting this is because that is exactly what they suspected, that their money wasn't going to the bees. They already pay, in addition to that, they already pay for their own inspections and everything else. They pay for people to drive out, pay their mileage, pay their fees, and they figure enough's enough. So they are sending $8,000 to the department approximately a year for inspection fees.
But sure. Sometimes perception is a little bit different than what's actually happening. Mr. Reinholz, can you maybe help us figure out what's happening with those dollars?
Mr. Chairman, members, the spreadsheet that I handed out that reflected the governor's bill quite a few weeks ago had this listed on there as a loss to the general fund of, I believe, that because, no, this was not a governor's rec, excuse me, it was not. But this is, the fiscal note shows a loss to the general fund of $13,000 in each year. The bill stops the collection of the fees from the beekeepers, so that money will no longer be coming in. It happens by statute to be going into the general fund, but it's no different than if this committee passed that the sales tax was reduced to 3% rather than 6.5%. The bill would have to account for the loss of those dollars to the general fund. So passing this bill will lose $13,000 to the general fund of revenue. On the expenditure side, the bill does not specifically address any expenditures. I did talk to the department. The department indicated that they are currently spending about $77,000 a year on beekeeper activity. And if you recall from this conversation on the beekeepers in previous years, a lot of it has revolved around the fact that the general fund is subsidizing the beekeeper activity in the Department of Agriculture. And that's why this money was going into the general fund. When you are subsidizing a program, it is difficult to subsidize it out of dedicated funds. When you're subsidizing the program in excess of the revenue collected for the program fees, they typically are dumped into the general fund, because then the general fund has an appropriation that subsidizes. The effect of this cuts revenue by $13,000 a year as it is. I'm not sure what the amendment does. Perhaps the department could indicate whether that amendment is going to also raise some revenue. And I didn't see anything in the amendment that indicated where that revenue went. If it went into the general fund or if it went into one of the special revenue accounts. And I didn't see anything in that amendment that actually appropriated the money to the department either. So I really am not certain that the amendment, it fits into larger statute, and research is not here today. I would ask them that maybe the Ag Department could indicate that that amendment worked.
Mr. Chairman, the fees that we would collect for the export certification would go into the general fund. The statute is silent on where they're deposited, so general statute kicks in and everything that doesn't say anything to the contrary goes to the general fund. That's the $8,000 part. We estimate that brings in about $8,000. And as Mr. Reinhold said, we spend about $77,000 a year. That's basically one position and the accompanying cost to that. And probably most of the work of that person is for the export certification, more so than the registrations, I would say. Mr. Friso could maybe speak to that. So as long as we're doing the export certifications, which is the part we inadvertently repealed last year and would like to put back in, we would like to keep that person and keep our budget the way it is. But we recognize that this would cause a loss to the general fund.
And, Mr. Chair, if I could ask a question, has the department come up with a new fee structure going from here forward once you don't collect the registration fees from beekeepers for the export services? Is there a new fee structure proposed that would add dollars? Because I have heard, I will be honest, I have heard coincidentally from beekeepers that they've already seen laid out a new fee structure that would add to that $8,000 that's been proposed by the department.
Mr. Chairman, we did redo the fee structure on the registrations last year. On the export certification, there are some ideas, I think, to change it and perhaps make it a dedicated fee that would cover the cost of the activity, which it's not doing now. It's paying a few thousand dollars toward that position, but not anywhere near covering the position. But again, Mr. Friso may want to speak to what's being thought about for potential changes.
And again, Mr. Chair, I'd suggest that that is what's going on, and a lot of that, or some of that, or all of it, the $13,000 may be covered by the new fee structure they're proposing for inspections, too, in the future.
Representative Gaines.
Mr. Chairman, at this point, sitting here and not being a beekeeper or in the department, I'm thinking maybe we should appropriate the money to hire a mediator between the beekeepers and the department. But because I feel a tension here that shouldn't be, I want to ask the department, do you do research on bees right now?
Ask Mr. Friso to answer that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, the department does not provide research. The apiary statute basically provides general sanitation inspections, and then in the fall of the year, statute provides, or did provide, the export certification that other states require. So that's, but we do not provide research.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, that's concerning to me, that you don't provide research for both the bees who are being raised for their honey and pollination and the native species bees that we all depend on And I'm not understanding why, when something is so fundamental to our agriculture, we aren't paying attention to it. I mean, it's just from just a urban legislator's point of view, this does not seem right.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, I think you make a good point. The university does have an active research program, but what the statute authorizes us to do is to provide routine inspections looking for diseases and pests.
Okay.
Representative Wagenius.
If there are diseases and pests, research needs to be done. That is just absolutely clear. The statute doesn't authorize it, I trust, because you haven't asked for it to be authorized. That's because if the Department of Ag asked for that and thought it was important, I'm sure that would have happened. I mean, that just doesn't... And then I go back and say, when something is so fundamental to our agriculture as pollinization, I'm just thrown... why you're not researching it. And it just boggles my mind.
Is the University of Minnesota researching this, the bee issues?
Mr. Chair, they do have an apiary person at the university that works with the beekeepers, Marla Spivak, from the U of M Apiary Department.
And what does the department do to coordinate with the University of Minnesota on it? Because I'm one of those that believes that the state of Minnesota department shouldn't be involved in direct research. They should be contracting with University of Minnesota for that type of research. Is that type of relationship there, or are you having no contact with the university?
Chairman Osmond, we have a very close working relationship with Dr. Spivak. We share all our inspection results with Dr. Spivak and the apiary community. We prepare an annual report that shows the levels of American fowl brood, various pests of apiary. So I communicate with Dr. Spivak very frequently so that she is aware of what the pest pressures are and so she can focus her research attentions to those issues.
Okay, so the testimony is that although the department's not doing the research, you are involved with the research area and keep contact with them.
Representative Osmond, that's correct.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you for clarifying that part of it, Representative Osmond, but there were two parts of it. There were the bees that are raised for honey and for exporting, and the whole pollinator system. Does the same Dr. Spivak work on the pollinator systems?
Mr. Chair...
The native pollinators.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, I believe she works on all aspects of beekeeping. The honey production, as far as an industry for the state of Minnesota, is the larger component. Honeybees are, in Minnesota, important pollinators, and the exporter ones are generally the ones that are more involved in pollinating activities. Those are the ones that are moved to almond groves in California or to orchards in the south part of the country.
But my question wasn't about... I think Representative Osmond resolved the bees that are raised. I'm talking about the native species that pollinate many crops and our gardens and our flowers. That was my question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, my apologies. You're correct. There are a number of native species. There's hundreds of species. I do not believe that Dr. Spivak spends a great deal of time on the native species. I think her primary focus has been with the commercial bee production. But I would have to defer to Dr. Spivak.
And Mr. Chair, the university was here for the policy part of the discussion. I don't believe they're here today They have been working with the bee producers on this. And frankly, the department up till about a month or so before session was working on this same issue with them and then kind of dropped out. And that's when they contacted Representative David's office, who said, well, go see Junkie. He does all the food things, hot dish, pickles, honey, you know. And so I ended up with this bill. I'm not carrying it for any other reason other than that and to have the discussion here on their behalf. So, and we do have someone here to testify. I handed out a letter from Fred Holt, who's the president of the Minnesota Honey Producers, who brought this forward. He was not able to be here today to provide testimony other than this letter, but he certainly would be available if we pass it before we pass the bill out, either you know later in the week or next Tuesday, if we wanted more insight from the actual Honey Producers Association. And I do know that Mr. Overton, who's referenced in here, is here to testify against the bill too, I believe.
And before we go to that testimony, I think that when we're talking about the other types of pollinators, the bumblebees, whatever we have out there, is anybody in the Department of Ag involved with that? Those species at all?
Mr. Chair, the department is not involved in any direct research or activity with native bees other than our relationship with the apiary program.
So if we were if some problem was occurring out there with native species, how would we discover that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, if you're talking about an introduction of a pest in bees right now, with the repeal of the apiary statute, that would remove our inspections of those commercial beehives. And typically, the pests that are affecting the commercial bee colonies are going to be the same ones that are going to be affecting many of the native species. And that is really the reason the law was brought into effect almost 100 years ago, is because some of the commercial activities were introducing inadvertently various pests. And so this system was set up in order to provide an inspection service to look for those sorts of introductions. And we find them every year, and then we take regulatory action when we come across them.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for asking that. But pests are not the only thing that harm native species. I know that pesticides are a problem for them, and that's, you're not considering that. I think what is a problem for the big picture agriculture, and I'm always curious why our department isn't dealing with that. It does seem that we should maybe talk about that at some point.
Thanks for your testimony. Speaking, I believe, in opposition to House File 3442, Mr. Overton. If there are others that want to speak on this bill, please let us know. Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, honorable members, my name is Gary Overton of Randall, Minnesota. I've been a commercial beekeeper for 25 years. Both of my sons, 27 and 29 years old, are full-time self-employed beekeepers. Speaking for myself and them as well as several other commercial beekeeping families, I wish to state our strong opposition to this bill. We are primarily but not limited to being California migratory beekeepers. Almond acreage in California is expanding rapidly. There is some question if American beekeepers can increase our colony counts fast enough to keep up with demand. Until 2 years ago, I had never received a pollination dollar. This year, I'll receive $60,000, with a large number of my colonies dead. That number stands to double if current projections from California hold. We agree with those who initiated this proposal that Minnesota laws are outdated and function poorly. However, we believe that these issues are too important to try and fix by patching together a quickly worked out solution. I believe in this current debate that both the leadership of the MHPA, who instigated this repeal, and the beekeepers I represent agree that some form of interstate inspection is desirable. The amendment that we're talking about demonstrates this. We firmly believe that the best way to ensure an orderly movement of bees to California will be to review and rewrite our apiary laws to reflect current industry needs. North Dakota recently rewrote their laws, and they seem to be working very well with greatly reduced beekeeper department friction. We also firmly believe that there are other benefits to a properly designed SIPS program. Repealing our laws will make it more difficult, we believe, to rewrite the statutes in the future. They will jeopardize general fund money and eliminate at least some of our fees that we pay now. So we are asking you to delete this repeal and give the whole Minnesota beekeeping community an opportunity to fully work this out among ourselves before any changes to the law are made.
Questions? Mr. Chair, and again, and I've talked to Mr. Overton and others too along the way, and again, there's a couple, two or three different issues here. Number one is the sunset of the statutes we're talking about, and I don't know why your bill doesn't have the repealer hooked to it. I see that now. I do have a copy of it because we're supposed to have those repealers hooked to these bills now, but I don't know if you have that in your file or not. But I don't think there's disagreement, like Mr. Overton said, that these laws are antiquated. They're 100 years old. They're not addressing what the current beekeeping folks need to have or be done with the department. Mr. Overton's worry is if we sunset them, then it's harder to come back. If they meet over the summer and say, here's what we do need, and come back next session, then it's harder for them, they assume, to put it back in. I would tend to disagree with that. We are still leaving the inspection provision, which we just added, so they can still have inspections on the interstate transport, and I think they're agreeable to that. And their worry is just on the legislative process, that for some reason they wouldn't be able to reinstate an upgraded system of or an upgraded statutory language for beekeepers. And I guess I'm not worried about that, but again, it's up to the committee's will what you want to do on that, Mr. Chair. I think they should be updated, and I think someone next year who's ever here sitting on this committee or an ag policy probably should carry a bill for them to update their statutes if they can come to agreement with the department, the university, the beekeepers on how they should rewrite those. But I don't think sunsetting antiquated statutes affects that in any way, shape, or form.
And Mr. Overton, were you able to provide testimony to the Agricultural Policy Committee when this bill was before you?
No.
Did you have communication of your opposition?
No. I was unfamiliar with the process, and I asked President Holke to keep me informed of the bill number and the committee meeting dates, and I received no information. Mr. Friso, I had to go to him to get information about how to involve myself in the process. And I thank him for keeping me updated on things.
And Mr. Chair, on the policy committee, there was no opposition. Like I said, the university was there, the department was there, and Mr. Holt was there, and it was all, there was no opposing testimony at that time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Overton, I apologize. I came in late. But I think you said that when you transport bees back from California, that you had something like 60,000 die? I heard
no,
you.
No, I'm sorry. I was commenting on the rapidly changing economic environment for migratory beekeeping. 2 years ago, I received no pollination money for doing the same thing I do now. This year, I'll receive $60,000
from the almond growers.
From the almond growers.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you. Came in late. I won't do it again, I promise.
Because we're not having any more meetings.
Mr. Overton, after you were done, Representative Johnson basically said what you were worried about. Did he paraphrase that correctly, or what your concerns are, or not?
He paraphrased them, yes. I believe I have more concerns in that. I know that the board of the Minnesota Honey Producers makes it seem like it's a consensus opinion, but in the beekeeping community, it's far from that. It's a very divisive issue now, where I'm getting phone calls at midnight, loud phone calls. And we believe that we just want time to work it out among ourselves without jeopardizing the funding. We believe it'll be harder for the department to maintain a quality staff if we change the laws at this time. That's my understanding of the situation.
Further questions?
This is kind of a tough one because a lot of times in organizations like yours, we hear from the leaders of your group, and then we hear from the people that haven't heard from the leaders of the group, and it's a hard time for legislators to find out who's really, you know, wagging the tail here or what. So,
right. We're primarily, you know, a social educational group. So many of us don't pay attention when we hear other things going on until it's too late.
And you're currently vice president of that group, right?
I am.
Representative Wagenius.
I just want to make our life just slightly more difficult. The reason that, of course, we have to transport bees to California to pollinate the almond trees is because they, for some reason, they no longer have native pollinators. And that is a good clue for us and why our Ag Committee and our Department of Ag ought to be looking at the issue of native pollinators. It isn't a small issue.
Other questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Representative Rudolph.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, maybe I'm just a little slow on this, but so if this is repealed, just how does it affect you and others like you?
Well, it's difficult to know the exact implications of repeal. Will the current inspector be employed fully for the summer and be... The situation is fluid. Last summer, California asked for fire ant pre-certification. It was not a very good system, but this summer they may ask for something else. If I could, I would read a quote from Dr. Eric Musser, University of California. First of all, we're under the understanding that if this repeal goes through, it will be difficult to maintain long-term qualified inspection. If we would be assured that we would have excellent inspection long-term, it would eliminate a fair amount of our opposition. Dr. Musson said, we will stop a load of bees at the border for many reasons, 20 or 30 different pests. It is a lot tougher to get into the state under these conditions if the load wasn't previously certified. If a new problem like Tropalalep sclerae arrives, new regulations will be in place and certification to travel between states will be mandatory. He said, are you sure you want to give up your apiary program? Contemplate very thoroughly before making your decision. I'm asking you to give us the opportunity to contemplate that very thoroughly. We have not done that in our organization.
Good question, Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I might have missed this, and if I did, I apologize, but why is California, why did they lose their native pollinators? Is that the Africanized bees that are more aggressive, or is it a pest, a disease,
people? My understanding of that is the monoculture of the almond orchards. There are hundreds of thousands of acres of almonds with nothing growing under them, no weeds, no habitat. So they've lost the habitat.
Mr. Chair, I could educate the committee on something here, if you don't mind. When the almonds are actually in the tree, they're almonds, but once they fall to the ground, they're almonds. It knocks the L out of them. Thank you.
We're continually corrected out there with our pronunciation.
Could someone from the department come down quickly? Could you come back? Thank you for your testimony.
And Mr. Chair, while they're coming, I assume one of the questions we should ask them is, will they keep their bee person on until next year if they're rewriting the rules? That's their whole concern. Again, I wish if you had a copy of the repealers here, there's nothing that says that they... In fact, I don't think there's any statutory language that actually prescribes a beekeeping position in the department. I have not seen that anywhere in statute. So we're not eliminating anything. It's only the department, if they would choose to eliminate that position, that it would go away. Because there's nothing in the repealer that eliminates a beekeeping position at the department.
From the department, will we lose the, if we repeal this language, are we going to lose the inspections and certifications and so forth that the others have been depending upon in order to be able to market their product.
Mr. Chair, if the repeal goes forward and then we reinstate the export portion, which we would like to do, we would try and provide that service. The difficulty that we have is the current inspector we have, basically one full-time position, is a very unique skill to have, and it takes a certain amount of expertise to conduct apiary inspections. So right now, we are able to maintain that position on staff, and he provides services beginning early in the spring for both bees coming in and then just the routine annual inspections, and then in the fall doing the export inspections. We would work very hard to retain that person, that position. We would very likely assign him to some other activities within the department, and then during those fall season of the year, divert his work towards the export inspections. But we do have a concern that just maintaining that expertise within the agency.
Okay. Rep. Sanjunki, as this bill goes forward for further consideration, you may want to think about some language to make certain that that
position
is or services that position provides are maintained.
And I'll work with the department and our research folks on that to make sure that that's maintained.
If they're dependent upon the language in order to try and have the outcome of the service,
yeah. It
seems to me that we can go ahead with the repeal of the language, but just verify if the service would be provided.
And I would hope that would make Mr. Overton and others comfortable that we will maintain the...
Mr. Overton, would that cover kind of your concerns? Then? Or if you could come up to the testimony. If we maintain the services, and even though the language is taken out, but if we maintain the services, that kind of takes care of your major concerns?
Yes, that certainly alleviates some of our concerns. And the other primary concern is will we be able to truly rewrite the laws?
And Mr. Chair, again, I know half the committee here is on the Ag Committee, and hopefully most of them will be back next year. That's not a problem. I mean, I want to assure the beekeepers that we certainly will do that. Whether this is here or not, the old statutes, you should get together with the university, the department, and yourself and put together new statutes, recommendations for next year if that's your desire. And we certainly, I'd look at them. I'm sure the chair here would too.
I agree that we will do that. I'm the program chairman for designing our summer meeting, and that will be the item of conversation.
And so you're a little clear on our process. What we're, as a finance committee, we're looking at more of the financial issues and letting this bill go forward with, because it had unanimous support from the policy committee. But by wording it the way we are, I think we can take care of the concerns that you had, and then your ongoing concerns need to be dealing right with the policy committee, which Representative Junkie is a leader there. So.
I guess the financial concerns, yes, sir.
Okay. House file, anything else, Representative Junkie?
That should do it. We'll work on that language, Mr. Chair, before the for your bill coming out of here next week or whenever that is.
House File 3442 is laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
The next would be House File 3397. Representative Cornish. And we are, members will be handing out more complete or a newer version of House File 3397. So what you have in your packet right now, if you'd set that aside, and it'd be the first engrossment of House File 3397 that we'll be considering. Representative Cornish moves that bill. Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair and members, House File 3397 is the Lambs bill, and rather than get into explaining the thing that I've just seen the first copy of the engrossed until now, I'll turn it over to the DNR to testify as to the contents of the bill.
Okay. And if you could focus our attention to the fiscal portions of it, there may be several components of the bill that really is not directly being impacted by this committee. So you could focus on the fiscal.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Kathy Lewis with the Lands and Minerals Division, DNR. What this bill is it started out as the DNR boundary bill and land sale bill. Since that time, it has had different tax forfeited land sale provisions added. So it's a combination of the county's request for tax forfeited land sales and the DNR land sales. The fiscal issues relate to the land sales, not the boundary issues. There's no request for funding to add additional lands actually into the state parks or the forest. Those come under separate recreation, so it's the land sale provisions that have fiscal impact. The bill itself covers basically about 710 acres of land, 783 acres of land, plus the Itasca County provision for the land exchange. I'll go into that in a little bit more detail. The state lands totaled 120, whereas you started out, the state lands totaled 128 acres, and that is both trust fund lands and acquired lands. And the trust fund lands revenue goes to the Primus School Fund. On the acquired lands, the revenue would go to a budget balancing provision that was passed last year. Last year, there was a provision that said the state agencies must sell a total of 6.44 million acres, excuse me, $6.44 million worth of state land. And so the acquired parcels here are not significant in value, but the money would go to that budget balancing provision. Since the bill was first introduced, one of the amendments was that Otter Tail County requested that the school district be able to purchase land, and that land is subject to a referendum being passed in November for the school district. That's another 73 acres. That one is would be the most valuable of the state-owned parcels, and that would be in the area of several hundred thousand dollars, and that revenue would go to the $6.44 million. Most of the counties are fairly modest acreage. Some of them are going to local units of government. We don't have a value on those particular pieces of property. That's some value that the counties determine. The large one here is Itasca County. Itasca County is working on a land exchange for the proposed steel mill that would involve about 7,000 acres of tax forfeited land. The exchange is of substantial equal value with the private entity, but the bill also authorizes the county to do a direct sale to Minnesota Steel Industries. And when you're talking about 7,000 acres, you're talking several million dollars worth of land. They have a provision here called the Land Replacement Fund where they have the first $1 million distributed as it would otherwise be distributed for tax worth on land sales, and the remainder goes into a special fund to purchase additional tax forfeited lands in the future. That's the actually substantial fiscal issue in this bill.
All right. Thank you very much. Any questions from the members remaining here? All right. Mr. Pojar, did you have something you wanted to add to this discussion?
Mr. Chairman, no. If there's any questions, we'll certainly answer them.
Mr. Einholt, did you have anything you wanted to add on the financial aspects of this bill?
Mr. Chairman, members, I was talking with Finance and DNR on this. I don't believe that past practice was to send these bills along, submit these bills taking credit for dollars sold and putting them into accounts, but the governor did with this bill. Maybe the Finance wasn't aware that had happened in the past, so this bill is in the governor's budget taking credit for $20,000 worth of general fund revenue So it would have to, I'm accounting for it, and I would suggest if it's going on its own, it has to go to Ways and Means.
From the DNR, do you have any comments to that?
No comments, Mr. Chair. Maybe that arises through the revenue that's going to meet the budget balancing provision for the $6.44 million. I was not aware of that particular issue.
Mr. Chairman, members, there's $20,000 worth of general fund revenue in the governor's budget as submitted, claimed for this bill. There's also revenue to some non-general fund accounts.
Okay, any other questions, Representative Junkie? Any questions? There will be two provisions that I'm working on that will be done on, that if they're completed by DNR, we'll do them on the, I'll be adding to this on the floor. I don't believe they have any financial impact as this bill travels along, or we'll try and put them on somewhere else. But right now the provisions are being negotiated between DNR and the parties. Mr. Meyer, do you have anything you want to add to that?
No.
All right, Representative Cornish, anything else to House File 3397?
Mr. Chair, where are we sending this then?
This will travel on its own and go to Ways and Means.
Okay.
Is that your motion?
That's my motion.
Okay, the Cornish motion is before us. All in favor of the motion, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried.
Thank you.
Representative Wardlow, we got two of your bills before us. Which one would you like to take first, Representative?
The easy one. 3248,
House File 3248. And the chair will move House File 3248. Representative Wardlow, to your bill.
I believe this would probably go to State Government Finance.
Is that correct? Okay. There's fiscal note on this?
Yes, there is.
All right. That would be the appropriate motion then. To State Government Finance. Chair will move House File 3248 be recommended to pass and referred to State Government Finance. Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. The fiscal note is negligible, but it's still a fiscal note. This bill, all it does is allows anybody who's in active duty, whether they live in Minnesota or whether they live elsewhere, when they come home on leave, all they got to do is go in. They can go to a park, get in free. All they have to do is have a military ID and a set of their orders pasted to the window, and that allows them to enter the park. And that's all this bill does.
Okay. Does DNR have something you'd like to add to this bill? Any testimony? No. Mr. Meyer? But Mr. Reinholz, did you leave? Must have. Yes, if you would. Mr. Reinholz, we're on House File 3248. It does have fiscal note. If you could, it's negligible, but could you give us some insight on that or your thoughts on it? Otherwise, we're prepared to proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members, I did review that fiscal note and did talk to the department. If they're saying they'll basically absorb that cost when they say it's negligible. So I believe this has an appropriation, though, also in this bill to veterans. Is this the one that has that? Is that the other one?
That's the other
one. No, that's 3249.
Mr. Chairman, excuse me then. I would say this bill could be, is the question where to send it?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair? I'm thinking of State Government Finance rather than the floor because they might want to look at this for inclusion in the vets on this bill. That's one reason I was thinking of State Gov.
Mr. Chairman, members, if that would be the author's choice, he could obviously request that. I would say that the fiscal note indicates that it would not require be sent there.
Mr. Chair, we can always send it to the floor. Thank you. We can always send it to the floor and then send it back if they want to also include it. Yeah, that happened to another one of my bills already. So.
Well, Representative Wardlow, I would suggest you send it to the floor, put it on a general register, then you have it there. When you go to state government finance, someone there can offer this as an amendment to their bill. You don't need the actual bill there. Then you've actually got two paths that it can travel on, and it gives you a little insurance and just a little heads up for you on.
I agree with you, and let's do that. Let's go to the floor.
Representative Osmond, did you have something? Raise your hand up.
No, I was just
okay.
Same comment.
Okay. Any further comment on House File 3248 from the members? All right, if that is the case, then the chair will renew his motion, or will amend his motion, that House File 3248 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail.
Thank you, members.
Now, Representative Wardlow, House File 3249. And, Mr. Reinholz, do we have the complete fiscal information on this bill?
Mr. Chairman, members, no, we don't. The fiscal note that was prepared for this was from the previous version, and it was amended. And I believe I did talk to the department. They have an estimate of the cost, but it hasn't been prepared as a fiscal note yet.
All right, thank you. And Representative Wardlow, and I see Representative Severson is here before us as well. When we were in policy committee, something came up at the very end of the policy committee that was a fiscal matter. It had to do with federal funds that would be lost if, in fact, the legislation as presented were enacted. And that kind of piqued my interest, certainly, and it seemed to be a fair amount. So could you, could Mr. Meyer or one of you address that issue?
Mr. Chair, can we move the bill?
Oh, yes. Where do we... Okay, so the chair will move House File 3249, and the destination from this committee will be state government finance.
Thank you.
Representative Wardlow.
This bill started off as my bill just for a park permit, and then Representative Severson had a similar bill, and he brought in a delete all amendment, and so actually this bill is Representative Severson's bill. And that's why he's here, because it's in my name, but it's his bill. So I'll let him speak to it, and also DNR would like to say something.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. House File 3249 is really a new concept in how we treat our returning war veterans. Typically in the past, we've had bonuses that have been given to them, and this does not exclude that bonus. But this... as you can read through the title, says the Veterans Revitalization Outdoor Act, and it's a move to try and get our veterans to get active in the outdoor environment once they come back by giving them a free lifetime hunting license, fishing license, deer hunting license. And those initiatives are really meant to try and say, not just once by giving them a one-time bonus, but by saying annually when they go to pick up that license from the people of Minnesota, thanks for serving your country. And so it's kind of an ongoing thing, and I know that the people that I've talked to, whether they're veteran or not, are pretty excited about this idea. When you talk to a veteran about this idea or someone who's coming back, they love it. And so the provisions of the bill basically say that if you've served in an area of conflict in Iraq or in Afghanistan for 6 months or 180 days minimum, up to 9 months, that you would be able to choose one of five options: either a hunting license, a fishing license, a deer hunting license, both a gun and bow, or a park license. The actual setup of the criteria with the DNR is going to be a one-time cost, and I'll let the DNR speak to that issue. The ongoing, I think, is going to be there are three categories: from 6 to 9 months, from 9 to 18 months, and from 18 months or more. For those members that have served in those theaters in combat situations. And so those that would be in Category 1 would receive from 6 months or 180 days up to 9 months would receive one selection. Those from 9 months to 18 months, two selections, and those from 18 months or more, three selections of those that are in the bill. And I'll stop there and see if I can address specific questions, but member from DNR here is also here to address the fiscal impact.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members, we're in the process of creating a formalized fiscal note. Representative Severson had asked us to calculate the cost of the bill based on 10,000 veterans, with one-third of them receiving one free license, one-third receiving two, and one-third receiving three. What we've done is taken the average cost of the licenses. The five licenses that are available, the average cost is about $22.60. You multiply that by the number of licensees, the cost for the licenses, the lost revenue to the Game and Fish Fund and the Natural Resources account is approximately $450,000 per year. We also estimated it would be about $100,000 to reprogram the ELS system to be a live, updated system whereby if you go in and get one license, it verifies if you're only eligible for one. If you get two, the question that came up in policy committee, say you get a fishing license at Lake Mille Lacs and Garrison, and then all of a sudden you go up to Orr, and you want to buy, you receive your hunting license, we need to make sure that the ELS system operates and identifies that and make sure that you're eligible. The other part of it is that, you know, if you want a park sticker, then you go to a park probably and get that, and we'd have to make sure that it works that fashion as well. So that's $100,000 there. The reason the bill came to this committee was our discussion about the loss of federal matching dollars we would receive. For each fishing license that we sell, we receive $7 from the federal government. For the hunting licenses, we receive $13. In our conversations with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, they would view these licenses as being free, so then they would not be eligible for these reimbursements. If you take the average cost of reimbursements at $10 and assume that half of these veterans will only get their free license, the loss of federal funds at this time could be up to $500,000. I know Representative Severson had spoke to me about his desire to speak with the federal government on that issue, but at this point in time, those would be losses as well to the Game and Fish Fund and Natural Resources account.
And Mr. Chair, members,
Representative Severson,
there's a lot of kind of fuzzy calculations going on here. We took 10,000 to be probably the end game number of those that would be eligible for this Revitalization Act in the end game. Currently, I think we're probably looking at about half that number, which will be ramping up depending on how long we're engaged in the conflict and how many members are going through. So I think there's a lot of, and I do, as was previously addressed, want to speak with the federal government, because I think we can, from the federal side, make some exceptions in here to say if these are for veterans who are coming back, there ought to be some exemption from those penalties to DNR.
Ms. Meyer, I have a question for you.
One second, Mr. Chair. I need to correct my math on those federal revenues. It would not be $500,000. It would be $50,000 based on 5,000 people and $10 per license. So I apologize for that.
Representative Wardle is a math teacher.
He must have not had Mr. Meyer then. Meyer, on page 4 of the bill, line 28, it's appropriate section 3 appropriations. All of the lines there are open, and numbers now are beginning to become known here in the Finance Committee. Would the authors want to fill in those lines, or should this be, since it's an open-ended thing and we're uncertain of what the actual outcome would be, would this be better framed as an open appropriation rather than a stated dollar figure, short of possibly the appropriation to do
that? Members, that would be one way to capture the actual costs that are ongoing with the program. As we stated previously, our concern is not with the policy being established, but the loss of revenue to the accounts that are there. So, however, we can make sure that we're paying into the accounts what actually is deserved would be the best way to deal with it.
And Representative Osma, do you have any guidance on that part?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I was reading the bill and I didn't hear the question.
Well, in the appropriation section, there are general fund appropriations that are blank, and the numbers are becoming known now from the testimony. The question I have is, since it's an open-ended, kind of an open-ended thing in a new program, wouldn't it be better if that were an open appropriation rather than a stated amount, except possibly the amount for the ELS programming? I'm thinking about how that section will lay out, otherwise filling in the numbers.
But I don't have a specific answer for you on that, because I'm concerned about where we're going to be able to get the dollars, whether it's coming from an open appropriation or from a an actual statutory appropriation. We need to have know where the dollars are coming from. And if I could, Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask a question.
Representative Osmond.
Have you picked the July 1st, 2006 effective date so it impacts in this fiscal biennium, rather than have it hit in a biennium where we may have some money?
Representative Wardlow. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Representative
Wardlow, that's on page 4, line 26.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Osmond. I think, this is a bill in process, and that's a good point. And I think we could move that to 2007. July 1st, 2007 goes in the next year's appropriation, I think would be appropriate.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I'm thinking that may be a way to be able to get some language moving forward. The other question I have, and this doesn't have to do with fiscal necessarily, but it has to do with the ability to actually have this go forward. Instead of having, it seems to me that what you're essentially trying to do is say a veteran that qualifies should have a free pass for all these different activities. There may be a limited number that they could actually pick. But it should be, because this is a lifetime thing, it seems to me that we may want to, or find it more efficient for us to do this just once. And have, like we do on our driver's license, when we have, like a motorcycle, I qualify to be able to ride a motorcycle that's then indicated on my driver's license. I know that the Department of Safety would probably get upset because they don't like to deal with anything extra, but it does seem to me to be a more efficient way and cost-effective way, to where we're only dealing with the veterans one time. And then they essentially have with them always the pass in the form of their driver's license that could be recognized by conservation officers or others, rather than having them go back every year or every, this paperwork and just kind of keeping track. I don't know what the department thinks about that, but this seems to me like there should be a more efficient way for us to be able to do this rather than 1 year at a time, or even a limited 5 years. As long as we're talking about lifetime, do it on something that's with them on a lifetime basis.
Ms. Meyer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Osmond, the concept that was originally brought to us from Representative Severson dealt with that, giving them lifetime licenses. It also created a lifetime license for the state parks, which we don't have right now, but it's something I think we need to talk about. When you purchase a lifetime license as a citizen, that doesn't exempt you from going to the ELS station every year and getting those licenses, so the veteran would still have to go to a vendor to obtain the tags or a fishing license every year, so that no matter how you did it, would still have to, that transaction would still have to take place. The concern with your concept is the upfront cost. When a person would become eligible, then we would be seeking, what the DNR would like to see in that situation is that the cost for the lifetime license be paid for at that point in time, which is roughly $500 to $600, depending on what license you're looking at. The fishing license is a little bit cheaper. I think it's $325. But in looking at a way to keep the actual numbers down and actually have the accounts credited for the actual usage at that point in time, we encourage Representative Severson to go this route, as Wolfson said.
Okay, Representative Osmond.
Follow up. If we don't want to do it for, because you need to track as to where how many licenses are going out and which licenses they are and so forth. You want that done on an annual basis. It still seems to me that the requirement that is on page 2, line 32, determination of eligibility certificate, if that could be identified on a driver's license, like we do in Representative Junkie, who was just showing me his driver's license, he has on there fire safety
or firearm safety, and so that people know that he is qualified for that firearm safety certificate. If we could get that kind of verification on a driver's license, at least then when you go to get your license, you wouldn't have to have the person bring along their DD-214 every time just to try and show that, yeah, I am eligible. There would be some way for us to have that easier.
And Ms. Meyer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Osmond, I apologize if I misunderstood your questioning.
Well, I changed the question.
Okay. The concept that we had discussed it also would have Veterans Affairs giving these eligible veterans some kind of identification, ID card perhaps, but that is a good way to do it. They could just transfer their information, but then the veterans would have to get a new driver's license to have that show up on there, because once you get into the system. But that is a good question and a good comment, and one that if this moves forward, hopefully we'd be able to implement.
Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to comment on the license, but that was well covered, I think. And obviously, as licenses are renewed, it would be added. Maybe you could use your form till the time you get your license, bring your form in, and it goes permanently on your license. It wouldn't cost any more, really, to do it at that point in time. My concern is a policy concern, Representative Severson. I don't have a problem with your idea or your concept, but when I think about the veterans in my district, it's much broader than the ones you're describing here. Obviously, we have World War II, Korea, Vietnam. We have Guard members that in the last few years that have served in Bosnia, which was no cakewalk either. And they were serving our country overseas. We also have the ultimate sacrificers, the families, the widows that may hunt, both male and female, widows or widowers from those conflicts. And I guess my concern is, how do I address the Vietnam vet in my district, or the Guard member who went to Bosnia for a year, and yet we're giving just to one select group? And I do see that as problematic for all of us. They're going to find out about this and say, gee, where's my thank you? And where's my, why are we focusing on one certain group here?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Junkie, I'm a Vietnam vet. And I don't want the folks coming home from this war to go through what we went through when I came home from Vietnam War. The Vietnam vets have gotten a bonus. I didn't, because I came in through Iowa and they didn't give us one, but either that or I missed it. But I don't have any ill feeling toward these veterans coming home, because I want them to have what we didn't have, and we need to make sure that never happens again. I go to D.C. all the time for different reasons, and I've been to the Vietnam Wall countless times, and I think I went away from that wall one time without crying. So there's still issues that I'm probably dealing with, and I want these vets coming home now to have some respite, where if we can just allow them to visit a park for free the rest of their life, just being out in nature, trying to forget. That's what I want to have.
And again, Mr. Chair, I agree with that, but again, how do I answer my other vets or the Bosnia stationee or the widow who says, geez, my question is, really is, not that I'm in no way, shape, and form, I think what your idea is a good one, but I suspect next year there'll be another bill to add another group if this passes, and the year after there'll be another, because we're all going to get those calls, and people are going to say, why not? And we're going to say, okay, I'll introduce a bill, and we'll discuss it. That's my concern. I think it's a legitimate one, and I'm just wondering how we're going to address that, and I'm sure the department's thinking through some of this too. This one is a roughly $600,000 cost. What will the next one be, and the next one be? And I'm not saying we shouldn't pay for it or find a way to pay for it, maybe with increases in the other licenses to say thank you. We've talked about that for other things in this committee. Representative Cornish remembers the other day on some other issues for license increases. But so number one, we have to figure out how to pay for it. Number two, again, how do we address who's going to come in next, or how we answer to these people back home that weren't included in the first round here?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Duncan, in speaking with other Vietnam vets, they don't have that question. They say, go for it. At least we got a bonus, let these guys come home and get this. They may or may not ever get a bonus. We don't know if that's going to happen, and if it is, it won't be very much. And we want to thank them every time they get their license. It's a reminder.
Hey, Representative Dennis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Junkie has said, I think, a lot of what I have to say. Second thing is, I'm married to a veteran, so realize I am very pro-veteran. Anyone that wants to sleep with him one night, I give him a fair chance. Anyway, what we are looking for and what we have done, and I've been to a lot of deployments and a lot of coming homes, what we're looking for, you cannot buy with money, and you can't buy with a trail pass. I'm sorry. You can buy it with spit, and you can buy it with being derogatory. But in this war, whether we agree with the war or not, we are pro-veteran, I feel. So, I have trouble with this, and that taking out a small proportion. I don't know what my husband got for a bonus. I think Representative Magnus said about $500. It probably was that. If he even would take it, I don't know. But nevertheless, I did hear Representative Severson said this does not deny him any bonus. And you know, I would hope we could do something for them. It looks like a real paper trail here to me, but I guess the DNR can live with it. A Representative Junkie hit it right on the head. I am going to have calls from World War II veterans, from Korean veterans, and so on that say, what are you doing? And I'm going to have to answer for this. So that's why I'm asking, no disrespect to anyone, and a lot of my former students are now in the military. I'm not anti-veteran, but we got problems with this to get it ironed out so it's workable.
Okay, Representative Osmond.
I have a question with regard to the lifetime issue and why, because Representative Wardlow kind of has talked about the need for acclimation back into society and given some opportunities for recreation and readjustment and so forth. But this is actually calling for lifetime. And what that, here's my hesitancy in that, is that it has an accumulative effect. We don't have any idea as to what the future holds and how many veterans we eventually may have. And it's not just a matter of providing a bonus for those that are at this time period, but they will then continue to be accumulated during their lifetime along with all other veterans at that point. And what seems to now be an affordable expense could in the future, long term, become very unaffordable. We could be having to pick up the DNR's costs for these different activities. I don't know. I don't have an assurance that there would be that type of support to be able to maintain it if it gets to be very, very heavy. So I'm concerned about that. As a former veteran of the Vietnam era, when we came back, we were given bonuses and some benefits, you know, even with job applications and so forth, got points and things. But those were always limited. You could use it one time, or with the financial bonus was given to us at one point in time, and then that was it. We knew it. And if we were limiting this to, say, like 5 years or something that was so it's measurable, and yet it doesn't accumulate with all other future attempts or needs to defend our country, I think would be something we could calculate easier than having this lifetime. Sitting here right now, we have no idea. You know, the veterans are coming back now, 30 years from now, 40 years from now,
what is that cost going to be to maintain them, plus everybody that has come in that period of time. Could become a very huge figure, and I don't know, I feel uncomfortable with that. I'd rather see us kind of focus on the something that would not be so accumulative along our line. Those are my thoughts. For this committee, Mr. Chair, I believe that the attention needs to be focused on, will the DNR be reimbursed for the costs, or how will we be able to afford those expenses? As the bill is written, I believe the DNR expenses are to be covered and to be covered out of the general fund from some source. We don't know exactly where that source is going to be. So I think for our purposes, this can go on. From a practicality standpoint, I think there's some real work needs to be done on this. I've mentioned two or three different areas. So, Mr. Chair, as we're considering to move this bill, I would recommend or make a motion that we re-refer this bill and without recommendation, so that we can get it to another committee that has the jurisdiction over those dollars, as well as many of the questions that I raised that really fall outside of our jurisdiction. I don't feel comfortable amending the bill here with those suggestions, because we're not the Veterans Committee. And but in our concern, DNR costs are going to be covered, but I'm concerned about how far down the road they'll be covered if the bill gets really, really high. And so that's I've expressed my concerns and made that motion.
All right, and Representative Osmond, that your motion would include going to state government finance, then? That'll be the next destination, state government finance?
That's correct.
Without recommendation?
Without recommendation.
So I had previously moved the bill to go to state government finance, but had not included in my motion any recommendation. So I'll withdraw my motion, and we'll take up the Osmond motion, which is now for House File 3249, recommended to move on beyond the committee to state government finance and not without recommendation. Representative Severson, do you have?
Yeah, just some closing comments, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the discussion here. I know that there are trepidations on a lot of these. This is kind of new ground that we're moving into, and the idea being that we have had people that have served in the past when it was a draft situation where they were compelled to go. We have a new force today that is a volunteer force, and a lot of what Representative Wardlow had relayed are the things that we want to address in this. We want it to be something that says thank you each year to these members that are serving our country now of their own volition, making sacrifices that members have made in the past. And I think if we take a look at, as Representative Wardlow had said, and a lot of other Vietnam vets, there were wounds that were put into place that they're still dealing with. And these are issues that I think we as a country need to address. But we don't need to compound the issue by doing the same thing. It was when I was at one of my get-togethers with some of the veterans, I was kind of astounded to hear that Korean War, when the vets came back, they got pretty much the same treatment as they did from Vietnam. And I didn't realize that. And I think what we've done in the past, we can learn from. And I think this is one of those processes that we can move forward with. And I appreciate the deliberation, and I think we can formulate this. But we need to say, not just once, we need to say every year to those that have served our country, thanks for serving our country. And this is one of the ways I think we can do that. And I look forward to working with the rest of the committee in the future here on this project.
Okay, thank you. Representative Wardlow, you have anything further to add?
Sure. Mr. Chair, I agree with
time here. We need to.
I agree with Representative Siefert. We should. We'll just continue to work on it.
Representative Osmond.
And the last comment I have is that with regard to the lifetime again, I understand the need for us to do something, but I volunteered, and I came back and we got the one-time bonus, but to try and have it go on, into perpetuity is really a difficult issue for us to deal with, and I would like that to be addressed someplace.
Okay, any other further questions by the members? There being none, the motion before us, the Osmond motion, is to move the bill to state government finance from this committee, House File 3249, without recommendation. Any discussion on the motion? Being none, all in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. And members, we have three things I want to bring your attention to. First off, in your packet is a memorandum from the Game and Fish Budgetary Oversight Committee for your information. Also, there are two publications in a box back here in the back somewhere. One of them is the Off-Highway Vehicle and Snowmobile Law Book, Representative Pennis.
I got it.
You already have that? Okay, just a second. And then Representative Cornish, the Game and Fish Laws, which you could review, are also available to all the members back there in the back. And then also, tomorrow, we're meeting again at our normal time, 8:15 tomorrow. We only have one bill at the moment, but there could be more bills added along the way. Any questions? 8:15 tomorrow. Thank you. The meeting is adjourned.